Good morning, and welcome back to Intrepid Radio. I'm your host, Todd Schnick. You know, I when I look back on myself and how I conduct myself in my business world and in my personal life, and I do an audit about all things good and all things bad about me, I'm when I allow myself to actually think about one of my weaknesses, it is my very, very poor ability to take feedback. And so when I got the opportunity to talk with today's guests, I was really, really excited about it, downloaded the book, and might very well likely completely change how I conduct myself on a daily basis. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. Say hello to Doug Stone and Sheila Heen, the authors of Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. Doug, Sheila, welcome to the show.
Pleased to be here.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yeah. So, Sheila, let's start with you real quickly, 30 seconds. Tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Well, this will be easy because Doug and I have more or less the same background. We met 20 years ago at the Harvard Negotiation Project and have been working over 20 years, first on the book Difficult Conversations that came out in 1999. And then between that book and this book, we've been traveling around the world working with organizations, both for-profits on six different continents, and nonprofits, ethnic conflict, and families on their most difficult conversations. And as you mentioned in your intro, Todd, feedback is always on that list. Doesn't matter where we are or what they're talking about, people struggle around the world with actually taking feedback well.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we'll use me as a good case study for today's conversation. Doug, real quick, anything to add on you and your background?
No, Sheila said it all. So we both teach over at Harvard Law School a course on negotiation and conflict management. And other than that, we're consulting and writing.
All right. Well, the book, again, is Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. Look, when you step back and say, oh, yeah, no, I'm lousy at taking feedback, it's obvious why you had to write this book. But walk us through how this the idea for this book and how it came together. Sheila, I'll start with you.
We have yet to meet an organization that feels like they have this feedback thing down pat, right? It doesn't matter whether you're a small business owner or a global multinational. Everybody complains that feedback doesn't work the way it's supposed to in their organization. And the usual fix to that is to teach givers how to give, get all the managers together and teach them to be more skilled givers and encourage them to be more persistent. And, you know, that's helpful as far as it goes. Everyone benefits when managers are more skilled as communicators. But eventually it occurred to us that actually we have this whole thing backwards. Rather than teaching givers how to give, we should be focusing on the receivers, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how much power or authority or skill the giver has. It's the receiver who decides what to take in and what sense to make of it and whether and how to choose to change. So we actually came to the conclusion that the real leverage is with receivers, including teaching leaders how to be better receivers, which is the most powerful thing you can do to change the way, the quality of feedback conversations and how they're handled in your organization.
Yeah, well, Doug, she kind of stole my thunder there. And the question I was going to ask is, what's the bigger problem? How feedback is given or how it's received? I mean, I can make the case that both are critical to the process. It sounds like the receivers is the more important focus of the work, but what is the bigger problem?
Well, we do think that it's the receiver. If you take a football analogy for a moment, if you're working with a quarterback and the quarterback and the receiver are practicing, and the receiver keeps dropping the ball, and you keep going to the quarterback and talking to the quarterback about how to throw it differently, you know, you're gonna make some headway there. But at the end of the day, you gotta also talk to the receiver, and it's the receiver who's gonna either catch it or not catch it, right? And so all the emphasis we've been placing is on the quarterback, on the feedback giver, and not the receiver. If you think about that conversation between the feedback giver and the receiver, it's the receiver that determines how they make meaning out of what the person's saying and whether they take it in. It doesn't matter how high level their boss is or even how well the feedback is given. If it's given well, it's more likely to be taken well. But still, it's going to be the receiver that makes that decision.
Sheila, you know, I think about my own personal situation here, and I have a business partner, a very seasoned business veteran, a few years older than me, a little grayer, very wise, a lot of experience in the business realm. But he and I are equal partners in our business, and when he gives me feedback, I bristle at it. I don't take it well. I'm probably the immature little young punk, but I don't handle it well, and I see it as an adult adult scolding a child. But now, when my wife gives me, let's just say it's the exact same feedback, and that's happened on plenty of occurrences. She's a very savvy businesswoman, and I treasure her counsel. And they may give me the exact same advice, but I take it very differently. Why does that happen?
Well, you're insightful in identifying that as the key difference, because when we looked at the reactions that we all have to feedback, although there's a million variations, they all fit pretty cleanly into three different categories of triggered reactions we have. And the second one is the one that you're identifying, which is what we call relationship triggers, or the challenge of we, meaning all feedback happens in a relationship between giver and receiver, and we can have a bigger reaction sometimes to who is giving us the feedback than even what the feedback is. As you've said, the same piece of feedback you hear very differently from your business partner or from your wife.
Well, Doug, why don't you share some of these other triggers that that Sheila just started talking about?
Yeah, so the first one is what we call the truth trigger, where we're sort of scanning the feedback with the question, is this feedback true? Is it right? Does it make sense? Or is it wrong? Is it inappropriate? Does it not apply to me? And that's a great question to be asking, right? Because no one wants to take feedback that's wrong or stupid or going to send us down the wrong path. So the question itself is very valuable and important. The problem is not the question. It's that we actually answer the question way too quickly. We jump in pretty much right away thinking about, well, so, nah, I don't like this feedback. Doesn't feel like it quite fits. But we don't really even know what the feedback means. The feedback tends to be given in these very general labels. And so someone will say, yeah, you know, you got to be more spontaneous, or you got to take the reins, or you got to kick it up to the next level. You know, we're trying to make sense of that, but what we tend not to do is we're not asking the follow-up questions. We're not digging under that label, because, you know, what does take it to the next level mean? That could mean a thousand different things, some of which are totally contradictory. So what we really have to do is dig under the label and ask sort of where does this feedback come from? What is it based on? What did you observe? And then where's the feedback going? What if I were going to follow your advice, what would I do differently? What would be the behaviors that you'd want to see? What would it sound like? And that doesn't answer the question of whether it's good feedback or not, but it gives you a grounding to understand, well, so now I know what the feedback is, and now I can figure out whether it really makes sense for me or not.
So, you know, when I think about this idea of getting feedback, and if you think dwell on it from any platform, from world leaders to the small solopreneur business person to a Fortune 100 organization to social, just personal social interactions, it seems like feedback, or getting feedback, or taking good feedback and doing something with it is just a common problem. Are we hardwired? I mean, is it in our head that we're just bad at this? I mean, and can we change? I mean, I have friends that say people just don't change. They just don't change. They won't change. They can't change. If this is a problem, is it fixable?
Well, so you're identifying that one of the tensions is that feedback itself, I think, does sit at the junction of two core human needs. We do want to learn and grow, and if you look at the happiness research, that's a big piece of what makes people happy and satisfied in life. But at the same time, we also want to be accepted and respected and loved the way we are now. And the fact of feedback often suggests that how we are now is not quite okay. And so I think we feel really conflicted about feedback. Also why we have such varied reactions, where sometimes we're so grateful, like that comes pre-approved from your wife, like, wow, that was really something I will treasure and learn from. And other times we can hardly even believe this person dared to offer us an opinion. In terms of whether we can change, one of the things, the third trigger that gets in the way of change is what we call identity triggers, or the challenge of being me. And if you look at the neuroscience, what we found is that individuals vary in their sensitivity to feedback, meaning how far do you swing emotionally and how long does it take you to recover, by up to 3,000%. So that some people are really quite sensitive and take a long time to recover, and others are insensitive, or maybe I should say even keel, although if you're insensitive, you don't really care. If I've called you insensitive, I suppose. And when you're in that swing, actually it distorts the feedback and it actually blocks your ability to learn anything from it.
Doug, talk about the real business applications of this. I mean, you can understand how taking feedback better can help you with your personal relationships, both business and personal. But talk about an organization and how they can take feedback better and grow as an organization and serve their customer base better. Talk about the real business applications of this idea.
Yeah, well, so all organizations want to be learning organizations, right? Everyone, that sounds good to everybody. And I think everybody sort of, everybody says that they want to be a good learner. But then the real question is how to do that. As Sheila mentioned, the common fix tends to be we're either looking at the feedback giver or we're looking at the system. We're thinking about, what's our performance evaluation system look like? And those are important, and the better the performance evaluation system, the better the organization is going to do with it. But what we think is that the real leverage in that context, the real way that people change and grow and learn, has to do with the quality of the conversations that they're having. It's not so much, well, we have a 360 system, or we have a whatever of 100 types of systems we might implement. It's not so much the system, it's within that system, what's the quality of the conversations people are having? Do people feel comfortable really talking about, you as a good example with your colleague, can you guys talk about, so how is it that we give each other feedback? What's working between us in terms of that? What's working less well? We often treat those conversations as we're allowed to give each other feedback, but we're not allowed to talk about, we're not allowed to reflect on it. We're not allowed to sort of talk about the how it's going, or what sort of preferences we would each have. And turns out that that's incredibly helpful, having the conversation that says, steps back a little bit and says, here are the things that really help me when you give me feedback. Here are the things I struggle with. That's the thing that really ends up making a big difference.
Yeah, Sheila, I imagine this has a real big impact on your ability to close deals and to make sales. Is your ability to take the feedback from your prospect in a way that's constructive and enables you to better position yourself for that long-term deal, yes?
I think that's exactly right. And what's interesting is that in the sales process, really good salesmen and saleswomen know that it's your listening skills and your ability to more deeply understand what is the customer looking for, what are they worried about, what experiences have they had in the past that allows you to craft something that responds to those needs. And then often what happens is we forget about all those listening skills and understanding skills when we step into relationship with each other during the course of the contract, right? So one of the things that you can do periodically is just check in with your customer as well as your colleagues. And one of the worst questions you can ask is, hey, do you have any feedback for me? Okay, so we naturally ask that question, but it's a terrible question because it's too vague and it's not clear particularly how honest you want them to be. What we suggest you ask instead is for one thing. Hey, what's one thing we could change that would make a big difference in how we're collaborating together or how we're delivering services? You may or may not be able to do it, but their one thing will typically be very concrete, very specific, and it's clearer that you want them to be honest, right? Because you're not saying, is there anything? You're saying, I assume there's something. What's one thing? To a colleague, what's one thing you see me doing or maybe failing to do where I'm getting in my own way? As a leader and an entrepreneur, people are hesitant to give you feedback because you're the boss. You're going to have to work harder to get it from them, but if they see you doing it, you also role model that you expect them to be just as open to learning and continuous improvement.
Sheila, you just mentioned the word listening a second ago in that answer, and it just a thought of Susan Cain's book Quiet, and then Dan Pink talking about extroverts versus introverts and ambiverts and all that. Is there something to be said for when you think about the context of an extrovert versus an introvert, whether you're giving or receiving feedback? Does that give you any clues in how you should position yourself or to both give and receive? Is there any impacts there?
Well, it's worth having a conversation between giver and receiver about what's helpful. So, for instance, I had a leader say to me recently, I've got this whole feedback thing figured out because my boss emailed me my appraisal on the Friday, which gave me time over the weekend to digest it and to write down all my questions and to feel really prepared to go into the conversation. And she felt that this was then the answer for what she was now doing with all of her direct reports. And so I asked the direct reports, how many of you think this is a great idea? And, about a third of them raised their hand. Because as introverts, this is part of the equation, that's really helpful for them to digest and have time to think about it. For the other two-thirds, they just had a different preference. And so that's like the worst thing you could do. You just ruined my entire weekend. Like, they would rather actually hear it in real time, and if they need to come back to have a second conversation, ask follow-up questions, that's okay, but they're more comfortable just processing it and reacting to it in the moment, which is one of the reasons why the receiver is best able to coach their coach or their leader on you know, what will actually be helpful to you.
Doug, is there a time where it's appropriate to ignore feedback?
Yeah, so one of the chapters, chapter 10 in the book, talks about setting boundaries. And being good at receiving feedback doesn't mean that you're always just going to go ahead and take the feedback. Being good at it means you're sort of sorting it, you're understanding what it means and what it doesn't mean, and taking the feedback that makes sense for you. But there's also a point at which it just becomes counterproductive, where somebody's just on you all the time. You know, we've all had that boss or coach or teacher or mentor who dogging us all the time, and you know, they're thinking, well, they're helping us and they're getting us out of our rut or whatever, and sometimes they are, but it can also just be overwhelming, and there's a point at which you just have to say, you know, I'm drawing a boundary. And social media gives us lots of opportunities to draw boundaries, because a lot of the feedback that we get, some of the feedback is useful in social media, but some of it is just people being snarky or people trying to entertain their friends or, you know, who knows what.
Yeah, no, you mentioned social media. Sheila, how does that impact this whole idea of feedback, both giving and taking? I mean, the opportunities now to level commentary on anything is so simple and easy. And there's a lot of people that shy away from social media, particularly businesses, because they're afraid of that permanent feedback that will forever be found on a Yelp review. I mean, talk about how social media is impacting this whole thing.
Yeah, social media has actually given a public platform to feedback givers the world over. Whether they know you, care about you, want you to get better, or just want to vent their own frustrations in life. And so a big question to ask yourself when something comes over social media is this feedback? Is this actually about me, and is there something I can learn about it because I've, you know, failed to provide a good experience to them, or I've inadvertently provoked them? Or is this somebody who is entertaining their friends with it, you know, who is sort of venting their own frustration in life? And I think that is a key question when looking at social media, whether you're a giver or a receiver.
Yeah, Doug, you know, talk about the internet, who does that benefit, the giver or the receiver of feedback? You know, because I'm when people say to me, oh, I just don't see any business value to things like Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and all that. And I say, boy, you're a fool, because it's just the massive intelligence gathering mechanism where you can see what people are thinking about and talking about. I mean, so, but who does it advantage, the person who's trying to give or the person who wants to take this wide swath of data and noise and learn from it?
Well, we would agree with you. It's going to be the advantage of anyone that uses it wisely. And if you're running a small business or establishing a new business and you're getting feedback, and even the sort of vicious, crazy stuff, there's going to be something to it that, you know, there's something that triggered that customer or client to be frustrated. And so you want to reach out and try to make sense of that, understand it, hear it as coaching. One of the big things that we haven't talked about yet, one of the big variables, is different people have different tendencies to hear feedback as either coaching, something that's going to help them improve, or evaluation, a judgment on them, something that sort of rates them and puts them in a certain box. And the more you're able to hear feedback as coaching, the better off you are. If you're on a sales call and you get rejected, then you get rejected again, then you get rejected again. If you start hearing that as evaluation, you know, you're not good at this. You know, stop doing this. This, you don't have the natural talent. That's going to be very demoralizing, obviously. If you hear it as coaching, you literally are asking yourself, okay, so what can I learn from each one of these no's? What can I differently? What information can I extract from it?
Well, I suspect if you were to poll the human race and say, do you want to get better? Do you want to learn? A significant majority, sadly, it wouldn't be 100%, but a majority would say, yeah, I want to get better. I want to improve. But yet I think I count myself in this, we stink at self-learning and taking the inputs from the world and making adjustments and improving both in personal and business. Why, you know, there's countless content out available for free where you can learn virtually anything from business to diet, to health, to wellness, to personal relationships. I mean, there's learning unbelievable. And if you ask it, you're probably going to get feedback from virtually anybody who's willing to give it. I mean, the opportunities for learning are countless. Why do we stink at it? I mean, is it because of the fact that we just we're hardwired to believe that more of it's judgments than it is coaching? I mean, is it that simple?
I do think a lot of us tend to hear it as evaluation. And for those of us who do, and I would certainly count myself in that group, you know, I have always found feedback very challenging, and Sheila and I wrote this book on feedback, and we became experts in it, and we've learned all about it, and I still find it challenging. So it's not like there's some magical thing that's going to make bad news good news or challenging feedback easy feedback. But what it does is it gives you the discipline to understand some of the mindsets that you can employ, just that you have specific tools, different ways of thinking that'll allow you to engage with the feedback, even if your natural tendency is to run away from it. And so it's not so much a matter of, well, now it's easy and now I'm done. Now it's, you know, I've learned how to ride the bicycle and I'm finished. It's a discipline that you employ every day, and that discipline really helps you get better at it.
Sheila, do you have something to add there?
Well, what I was going to add is just that learning about yourself is a whole different ballgame from learning about, you know, math or how to tweet. And it's partly because of the blind spots that we carry, that actually the challenge to see yourself accurately is always with us. I mean, I don't have blind spots, but I'm well aware that all of you do. And, you know, so we need other people to see them, but often the feedback they give us doesn't make sense to us. Partly, I'll just give a couple examples. You can't see your own face. You can't see your body language. We all have habits that we're unaware of, verbal habits, etc. But one of the most interesting pieces of research from Sophie Scott in the UK shows that we don't actually listen to our own voice or tone of voice. So often we'll get feedback about, you know, don't use that tone with me. And we're thinking, I'm not using some tone. What are you talking about? But there's a little part of your brain that's dedicated, it sits just above your ear, to listening to language. And it's very active as you listen to someone else speak. It decodes the meaning of the words and also the emotion and tone. But that part of your own brain turns off when you yourself speak, which is why we're also dismayed and shocked when we hear our own voice on a recording. Because while theoretically you've been listening to yourself every day of your life, we don't actually listen to what we say and how we say it the way we listen to everybody else. So it's a universal human blind spot.
Oh, Sheila, if I had a dollar for every time Mrs. Schnick said, there was no tone in that statement.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, Sheila, Doug just said a second ago, I mean, he co-wrote the book on how to take feedback well, and he still says it's challenging. The subtitle of the book is The Science and the Art of Receiving Feedback Well. I mean, this is a skill. This is something that you have to work at and you have to practice. And I mean, talk us through how you do practice this. Talk us through, give us a couple of tips on how the average human being like me can make some immediate steps to start doing this better, because it can be world-changing.
Yeah, so probably the first step is to recognize that just because the feedback is painful or frustrating doesn't mean that it's necessarily wrong. We're really good at wrong spotting, naming all the things that are wrong with what our mother-in-law, that critical comment she just made while she walked through the room. One of the things that I do is I sit down and I write down, well, okay, what are all the things that are wrong with what she just said? You know, first of all, I was unaware I cared about her opinion. Second of all, you know, it was very passive-aggressive the way that she said it. Third of all, you know, she said it in front of other people, which was totally inappropriate. But now I have to move over and write down answers in a second column, which is, was there anything that's right about the feedback? And that gives me pause, right? Because the feedback could be 90% wrong and inappropriate and poorly delivered, but there could be 10% of it that isn't wrong. I can decide whether I want to listen to it or do anything about it, but it's probably right and it might be just what I need to pay attention to. A big piece of this is actually lowering your own anxiety and reactiveness so that you're a little bit more curious and a little bit more self-aware about your reaction so that you can get whatever value is there, you can get out of the interaction, and the relationship actually benefits as well. All the research on marriage shows that spouses' willingness to take input from their partner is a key predictor for happy, stable marriages. So it matters at work, but it also matters at home and also with our kids, right? Because they're going to react to a bad grade or a bad call in the ballgame the way they see us react to that critical comment or whatever's going on at work.
Doug, final question. In all the research for this book, what was your most surprising discovery?
Well, you were asking a moment ago about, can people change? And that's a fundamental question. If people can't change, then we're all kind of in trouble. And it turns out the reason that's such an interesting question is because the answer is a little bit complicated. So social scientists have found that about 50% of how we are in the world is hardwired in, especially 50% of sort of our level of contentment in life or our way of responding to feedback. And then about 10% of it has to do with our life circumstances, but that leaves another 40%, and that 40% is the place where we can change most easily. And the 40% is related to sort of how we're telling the story of the feedback, or how we're telling the story of our life. And there we have different choices. Is this feedback catastrophic? Is it terrible? Is it going to help me? Is it well-intentioned? We can make some choices about sort of how big and small the feedback is, and how we end up telling that story makes a huge difference in how we take it. So this argument about, well, people don't change, it's true about 50%, it's about 50% true that 50% of how we respond is hardwired, but then there's that golden 40% where we really can have an influence over what's going on around us.
Outstanding. Well, guys, I hate to say it, we're about out of time. As I suspected, it was a really cool conversation. I appreciate you making some time to join me. Sheila, before I let you guys go, where can people get more information about this book and get their hands on a copy of Thanks for the Feedback?
So the book itself is available at any of your local independent bookstores, as well as on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And on our website, which is www.stoneandheen.com, we have additional information, including we're about to put up a reader's guide that you can actually use inside your organization or with your sales team to use the book and talk about how do we improve the way that we give each other feedback so that we can accelerate our learning together.
Outstanding. Well, we'll be sure to link up to that in the show notes. Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen, co-authors of the book, Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. Doug, Sheila, thanks so much again for joining me. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, that wraps this episode. Again, on behalf of my guests, Doug Stone and Sheila Heen, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you soon on Intrepid Radio.
What you want? What you want?
You've been listening to Intrepid Radio, hosted by me, Todd Schnick. You can find the show at intrepidradioshow.com. If you enjoyed the broadcast, kindly leave a rating and review on iTunes. Until next time, stay bold, and I'll see you soon on the Intrepid Radio Show.